Accession number 30,011, Mr. Roy Martin, Reel 3. And we're talking about the trip out on, you think it was the Empire Foey, but...
Yeah, it was definitely the Empire Foey.
What was it like, is it, the rest of the journey? You know, you had that rough bit in the Bay of Biscay. How did it go on from there?
Well, it was a bit... I don't know, my mate got fed up with it. If you're sitting down, all they was doing, these Indians or whoever they were, all they was doing was cleaning the bloody boat all the time. And actually, my mate used to go over and eat their food. So I caught him over there two or three times. Old Bobby was, you know, he got on well with them. But it was, I mean, we stopped, didn't we, all in, went through the Suez.
Where did you get ashore? What do you remember that?
Portishead. All
that was
over.
The first time been anywhere like that.
Yeah.
What do you think you bought,
sir? Oh, all right. It was handsome all the way through there. You know, it was quite nice. But then you'd pull up and they was all, like, threw something up and you had to buy something and then they'd drag it, you know, on a rope. And it was quite all right. You know, it's really enjoyed it.
Did you actually get into Portsea, you know?
No, they wouldn't let us off there. But we got off at Singapore.
There.
And things like that. Or just when, you know, he was only allowed 2 or 3 hours and things like that. But that was quite interesting and things like that. But no, the time sort of went quick. It was, there was always things, you know, to do and looking after yourself on the boat.
About this training business, you said you were shooting.
Oh, yeah. We went all of a sudden one day they come up with some rifles and on the back of the boat and they'd throw something in and you had to shoot it. And to be quite honest, I think that was about the only time I really ever shot a rifle. A couple of times on the range, but, and that was because my mate said to me, he said, bloody good, isn't it? They're sending us out here on active service. Fired a rifle. And I think that went with the majority of us. But see, but then in them days, you didn't know like you would now. I mean, I suppose there was infantrymen on the boat and whatever, but as we was just sort of...
Any of the military training on it, or was it just shooting a bit of rifle?
Bit of rifle shooting on the back, that's all. But other than that, it was,
now
you know...
Where are you going to? Where are you getting to? You know, you're on there for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Pushing out. Where did you land?
Well, we went to Singapore and we landed in Hong Kong.
That's where you finished?
Well, no, we went from Hong Kong... Over.
Did you get ashore at Hong Kong?
Yeah.
What did you do there?
Just walk round and have a look in the shops and things like that. And then we went down from Hong Kong, we went to Busan.
That's
down the bottom.
Korea?
Yeah.
And what was your first impression when you got to Busan? You got the ship?
Well, everything was hustly and bustly there and things like that. That they very made us very, very welcome. I can remember going in a cafe and one of the old ladies said, when you get home, make sure you look after your mum. That still stands there.
One of the old Korean ladies. Mm. She spoke English.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, a lot of them spoke. And I'll tell you what I did find when we was in Busan, the Salvation Army. Brilliant.
Tell me what they did for you.
Well, anything. If you was in trouble, didn't have letters, they was always there for you. And I've always appreciated.
Well, how did you contact them? Did they have a van or
no, they was there. You'd see they had a headquarters there. And I was surprised to see them there, the Salvation Army. I thought, you know, different things, like if you was out, they'd always stop and talk to you and how's things and whatever. Because then we wasn't in Busan very long. It was a matter of, I don't know, transit camp, which was pretty grim.
Now, you got out there in February, February 52, and where did you go, you know, from Busan then?
Busan, we went all the way up to Seoul.
And how did you get there?
On a train.
Remember anything about it? Was it a big thing, or was it just something you forgot about?
Well, it was a big thing, because all the Yanks was on there mouthing off.
Tell me about that.
Well, you know, they were saying, about we can't wait to get up the front and have a go, and how much do you want for your rifle, because our automatics freeze up and yours don't, but you don't let your rifle go, and that stands out a lot.
And what did you think of these Americans?
Didn't.
What do you mean?
They was all mouth. you know, that they'd speak loud so you knew they was Americans. And I don't think I ever made a friend of an American, actually. The Canadians was there. But that was on the boat.
Was there any trouble with the Americans on that train journey?
No, no.
So it's just they were...
Yeah, rabbiting off and, you know, we can't wait to get up the front. And
what about the terrain as you pass through?
It's beautiful. Oh, all the open. Yeah, all the paddy fields, and it was great.
Now, what happened when you got to Seoul?
Got off the train, freezing weather, and had a FFI.
That freedom?
Free from infection. We're all standing there, took all our packs off of our backs, dropped our trousers, and the old M&O comes along with a little thing and lifts your dick up and expects everything. And I thought that was pretty grim.
Pretty cold?
Yeah, it was cold. It was. I can always remember that.
Were anybody, what were they looking for in particular? Did anybody have VD?
Because ever when you first got on the boat, it was all VD and all this and all that, you know. And we had films on it and things.
How did you react to those? I mean, did you know much about it? Because you were still a young lad, did you know much about it? And what do you think? Because some of those films are meant to have been bloody horrible.
Oh, yeah.
What did you think of it?
Well, I thought it was pretty grim, and it would turn you off sex for life. Because they showed you, like, a fella with whatever he had, and they'd put this umbrella up his willy. And they open it up and pull it out, don't they? That was grim, and that sort of turned you off. But I think a lot of it went on over there. Because what they were saying was, I suppose, like, on the way over, if Hong Kong and whatever, these blokes went with these whatever. And that's why you had an FFI as soon as you got into Korea.
Were anyone caught in that inspection? Caught? I mean, were there any...
Well, you wouldn't know, would you? I mean, you're standing just, most probably...
So what happened next? And you've had the FFI?
Yeah, and things like that. And then we went to... We went into a transit camp again in Seoul. And these transit camps, you're just living out your kit bag. And it was terrible. I mean, you know, it was... And we had them bloody mess tins.
Tell me about it.
We had mess tins. They was sort of made of aluminium, whatever. One went in another and it was on an handle. And you open the handle and you had all your food in a mess tin. And the worst thing about it was, as I said earlier on, there was no washing facilities. All you had was a bloody cold, freezing cold butt. And you washed it out in that. And there was no hot water at all, you know.
So any grease?
Was all on the top of the thingy.
And on your mess tin.
Yeah, and things like that, yeah. There was no hot water for shaving. You had to break your ice. I can remember shaving in my own willy water.
Is that when you were up the line?
No, it was when I was in transit. It was terrible. It was sort of just being thrown into the bloody deep end. It was... I mean, I can understand it if you had all this regimental training and stuff like that, but we had nothing. I mean, I was in the army, done a few weeks in Aldershot, then I up to Kyneton. And then from there, just shipped over. And this is what they were saying. What are we doing here? We've had no training. And we was in, I think I went into about 3 or 4 transit camps. Yeah. And then finally, we got to...
So you were in these transit camps round about Seoul.
Yeah, up there. And then we...
What were you doing, I mean, during the day?
Well, just sort of whatever, until they would say, well, you're going too.
How would you spend the day?
Just walking about into Seoul, and you wasn't allowed out. They had curfews, didn't they? And things like that. You wasn't allowed out the camp. You just got cheesed off with all of it.
So you had no duties?
No. Not while you was in transit and things like that. You were just waiting for your final depot.
So what happened next?
Well, then from this transit camp, we went to this big X... Electrical College, massive place,
in Seoul
itself, and who is it, Pete and Bob and somebody else was there, but when we got there was a few people there, and it was a mobile laundry, They had all these generators and Christ knows what and washing stuff. But as being drivers, we still done other work out there.
It's a mobile laundry?
Yeah, this was, yeah.
And it was based in this Electric, old factory?
Well, college it was.
College, sorry, yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful so place.
Tell us about the mobile laundry. What was it? How was it set up?
Well, it was set up, we had a Jeep, three lorries, three Bedfords, and an AEC, the bigger lorry. And we used to, you know, go and pick all whatever. And they used to bring the stuff into us. And the fellas that was there used to do all the washing and drying and things like that. Because you had all the Canadians out there, the Australians. And they all used to come in and pick the stuff up. Then I used to have to go out and pick all the food up.
Now, did the unit have a name?
I can't remember.
Is it just a mobile laundry? It's like,
oh. I can't remember the name.
Does it sound like ordnance?
Still
in the RAOC?
Yeah, it was all done through the Ordnance Corps. All the supplies. All the machines. There was drying machines and everything was there. But there was a lot else going on. Like for the drivers.
Now, tell me about all your duties as drivers.
All my duties as drivers was going to the Australian HQ, picking up the food and all the sweets and whatever, which they never got because I used to throw them out the window for the children, the Korean kids and things like that. And they used to say to me, how comes we've never got any sweets then, Roy? But you never spoke to anybody. You either went there and come straight back and different things like that. If anybody was ill or as being over there, they went on R&R, rest and recuperation. They used to go in, I used to take them into Seoul. I used to get on a plane and they used to go to Tokyo and then come back and I used to pick them up. And there was all things like that we was doing, you know.
What were you driving? What truck did you
drive? Well, we had the Jeep, and I used to drive. He was German air officer Schmidt. His name was, and I used to take him up the front two or three times and things like that, and drive him out about all over the place. But then I used to drive all, you know, pick up ammo and stuff like that. And it was.
Was it always the Jeep you were driving?
No, no.
What else would you drive?
I would drive the Bedford mainly. I'd drive the AEC Matador. Which was the big one. That was when I used to go and pick up all the fuel and all the oil. You know, the big drums.
Is that the fuel and oil for the mobile
laundry? Yeah, and I used to deliver it to all the camps for their lorries and different things like that. We didn't, it's funny, we was in the ordnance, but there was no ammo. It was all food and stuff like that. It was...
Can I ask you, what did you think of it? We'll go through the thing, we'll talk about the bed. What about the Jeep? What did you think of the Jeep?
Oh, nice little thing.
What was good? Because it was such a famous thing.
Yeah.
Good about it?
It would go anywhere. You could drive it anywhere and it never let you down. And it was, you know, I mean, I used to go up the front, up the M-Gym and things like that, take the officer up there. That was quite an experience. That was pretty sad.
What was it like to drive the Jeep? Oh. Something in the road,
now. Yeah. No, it was beautiful. Short. It was nice, sweet, small. Very, very, very powerful. I mean, you could pull a lorry out of a ditch and anything with it. It was.
What would you carry on it, or would you just carry the officer?
Just carry the officer, or if any of the boys was going into town, you'd drop them off, but they had to be there at a certain time to pick them up to bring them back when they had a break and things. And then, as I say, I used to use the Jeep to take them to Seoul for the airport and things like that. It was quite, you know, thinking about it. That old airport was all covered in wire so the aeroplanes could take off on the sand. It was unbelievable, all the things we used to do. It was, you know.
Now, what were the trips like up to the engine? Tell us about it. Then we'll go on to the Matador.
Well, it was just sort of run-of-the-mill up there. And as you say, I mean, all the scenery and things like that was, you know. But then you go up there and you used to get the helicopters coming back. With the old stretchers underneath it, wasn't very good. And, you know, I mean, I was been up there and sitting down and you put your hand in the sand and bleeding two or three skeletons and, you know, skulls and
did
things.
Did you get under fire for all
No.
You weren't that close?
No.
And what about driving the matadors? Tell me about that. That was to pick the oil supply.
Yeah, the big 50-gallon drums of oil, diesel, petrol, whatever, whatever. We used to use that quite a bit. That was a good old, she was a good old girl, she was.
Tell me about the matador, because again, that's quite well known. But again, they're not about now. What was it like to drive? It's a big thing.
It was heavy. No powered steering, naturally. And you doubled the clutch. This is why you had all your training, because of the double with the clutches. And, you know, you had to wait a bloody long time for the engine to cool down before you whacked it into another gear. And it was unbelievable. But there was all different things, like all the bombing that was going on in Seoul. And all it would leave was the tram lines. And if you had a Bedford QL, which only had four wheels on, you could go across, because they used to say, the bloody hell are you doing? And I used to get on them railway lines, tram lines, and there was a hole underneath, and I used to go straight across them. And I used to say, here he comes. And, you know, it was, and we all used to do it, because they had wide tyres, and you could do it. And the Yanks couldn't do it, because their lorries had four lots of eight wheels on the back, and they just couldn't do it. And they couldn't get over it while we could do it in our Bedford QLs. That was pretty exciting and things like that.
Was the bombing taking place while you were there?
No,
or had it taken place before?
Before, yeah.
The Allied bombing.
Yeah, and the roads wasn't built, was they? But you still wasn't allowed out of that camp where we was.
What was your camp like? You were in the college. Did you just having... Were you inside the college?
Yeah, and where we used to sleep was a classroom. There was about four of us in it. And it was like a college. I mean, there was a big playing field in the front. And then you go up a load of stairs into the college. It was unbelievable, really.
What was your room like?
Well, it just had a bed in it, and we used to sleep in that. And then there was another...
Four.
Yeah, just the drivers. And down the front of the camp was a sort of a hut. And if you was on duty, you had to sleep in there. And that was a bit, you know, because we all had to have them mosquito nets and things like that, even when we was in there. But it was, you know, sitting here thinking about it, it was, wasn't all honey, I suppose. I enjoyed it, but, you know, Jack the Lad and all that, but... You know, it was, I met one of my mates, Reg Underay, he lived around the Fairway, and I knew him at school, and I met him over there, and I thought, you poor sod, you know, he just didn't fit in, he wasn't a soldier, you know.
What was the food like out there?
All right, food, what did we get? That potato, mash, pom, I lived on pom, and steak nearly the whole time I was there. That is why I'm not a fussy eater now. I'll eat anything. But we lived on Australian rations.
They were Australian?
Australian rations.
All of them?
Yeah.
Why Australian?
I don't know. And we used to have, and another thing we used to have and enjoy having, Australian food parcels. It's funny, isn't it? We used to have...
Why did you get them as well?
I don't know. Appreciation. We used to get a little card in it.
What would be in their food
bar? Well, bit of chocolate, whatever, sweets and stuff like that, you know, stuff from Australia. It was, and we had a little card in it as appreciation for what we
were
doing.
Attached to the Australian?
No, it was all one big 29th Commonwealth, weren't we? 29th Commonwealth Brigade. That was my address in Seoul, 29th Communist, thingly. But, no, you think about it, it was a long, long time ago, and a lot of people went through a lot more than I did, but, you know, it was...
Were you wired in the college? I mean, did you have a perimeter?
Yeah, you couldn't go out.
So what were the perimeter defences? Who guarded you? What were the defences like?
Well, we had a guard on the gate, but other than that, it wasn't too bad, but we had all Canadian provos. Canadian military police and things like that, you know. I mean, there was a North Korean bloke got in there, and these Canadian provos come in. Oh, they belted shit out of him and took him away. I don't know, but the Koreans that worked there told somebody, then they got onto the Provo straight away, and they come round and took him away. It was, I can remember that, really remember that. But I don't know, everything sort of went so fast, and you had to be on your toes all the time.
So was there no one patrolling the perimeter, or no. Were Canadians doing it?
Canadian provos was about all the time. And out there, there was a lot of military police. A lot of military police.
Were they all Canadians, or were they...
Well, no, and the military, they was all on these traffic duties. You know, with the telling you where to go, you can't go down there, and all this and all that. It was funny, really, thinking about it. There was a lot of...
How did they treat you when they're
on?
You were a driver.
Yeah, we got on fine, all of us, yeah.
They didn't bother you?
No, we got on, all of us got on fine.
Anything happened to you, just stories of what happened to you while you were out there, give us an idea what life was like.
Well, it was sort of run of the mill, you had to do this and do that. There was a few things like what happened, which... I know I shouldn't be saying this, but on the drive into the camp, there was a manhole. And the cover was off, and a bloke, I don't know how old he was, 16, fell down it, and the pipe went right up his backside, terrible. And I can remember this. I had to take him up the hospital. Terrible.
Did he die?
Yeah. Different things like that, it was, you know.
Was he British,
No, he was Korean. He was a Korean boy. I'll never forget it. Because we had house boys as well. They used to come in and we used to treat them and all this and all that.
How did you get on with the Koreans?
All right.
What did they do for you?
Well, you know, they'd do anything. I mean, we didn't have to do the washing because it was all there, wasn't it? But they was always polite. Hello, how are you? And it was funny. A lot of...
They actually do. Do you see what I mean?
Or they didn't interfere, they'd done what they their own, you know. But
if they were your servants, what did they do for you?
Well, only the houseboy used to whatever run, sort of, if you wanted cigarettes and things like that, he'd probably go and get them. But there wasn't.
He didn't clean the room out there?
No, he was just a boy. There was two or three of them in there. Young Kim, I remember him well, and all things like that. But
any other incidents that happened while you were out there?
There's a few. We had a bloody, he was a foreign, not a sergeant major, what did they call him? RS, whatever, he was injured, he wasn't a sergeant major, and he had a big Indian on his leg, and he was a bit funny. Threatened him a couple of times, but he didn't want to know.
What was he doing?
He was sort of running the place, he was... he wasn't a sergeant major or anything like that. He was something else. But he was a funny bloke, but I think they got rid of him, if I remember.
Was he an officer?
Yeah, sort of a non-commissioned officer. I forget what there's a name for him. I forget what it is now. But he was there.
What was he doing that was annoying you?
Well, he was just sort of big-headed. You mustn't do this, you mustn't go there, you mustn't... You must bring the food back and give it to the troops, not to the civilians. Like if you had, like this Australian food, there used to be a bit of fruit now and again and sweets and that. Well, I used to stop and sort of give it to the civilians and things like that. I mean, our boys didn't. They knew what I was doing. But I felt so sorry for them over there. But it was, you know...
Were both the NCOs all right?
Yeah. Well, I was a corporal or whatever.
When did that happen?
When I was over there.
What difference did it make?
None at all.
Not at all?
No, I think you got a couple of bob more in your pay, didn't you? I'm not sure.
You were in charge of anyone?
Well, yeah, I was in charge of the transport. In this, where we was. In this college.
How many? Who was it?
There was Bob, Pete. I think there was about five.
And you were just the corporal
in charge? Mm. I think it's got a mighty mob bit. For running of a transport section, you know, it's whatever, great sort of thing. But, I don't know. Because then I went on R&R to Tokyo.
Tell us about that then.
Well, that was quite nice. They took me to Seoul, like I used to take the others, and on the plane, I always remember that, going up the front, and you could sit up there with the old pilot, and because on them American people, they've all got their names on their uniforms, and, you know, once we're in the air, you can certainly come up, and, you know, how they talk, sit up the front with us, and it was nice, because when it came out of Korea, as it came out of Korea, it went over Japan, and you could actually see all the coastlines. It was very, very nice. I think I only had 5 days there, which...
Where were you staying there?
Oh, I don't know, some I can't remember where
it
was.
What did you do? Just get drunk or go out?
No, I never used to drink, didn't smoke or nothing. I used to go for walks and up the rivers and things like that. They used to have all them fish, and they used to blow themselves up and float on the top. And they had some lovely swimming pools over there. You know, diving boards, and it was quite nice. But, I mean, you could do what you like if you wanted to, but I wasn't into all that after seeing all them films. But,
no. You weren't a drinker either?
No, I didn't drink, no. I didn't want to do anything like that because you never knew what was going to happen.
What about the Japanese? How did you get on with them? I mean, the war had only been over about 6 months.
They was okay as well.
No problems.
Yeah, no problems at all. Yeah, yeah. I mean, where was Kyuri, Japan? We went to Kyuri, Hong Kong Kyuri, only for 2 days, then over, and then came back. And then we went up there, but there was that, actually I should have gone really, they offered me a trip to Hiroshima, which I didn't go. They said I should have gone, because it was quite a sight. But everything went so quick.
Just back in it, you seem to have got on better than most with the South Koreans. Tell me why. What did you like about them? Because, you know, or was it just that they were kids? What was it?
Well, they was friendly, and they appreciated us being there, you know. And they'd always talk to you. It was the same as over at Kingston, you know. But they was okay because we would help them out, and Pete and Bob, we'd always give them half of our food and stuff like that. It's, you know, and I felt sorry for a lot of them because, I don't know, I suppose their husbands was in the army up the front and things like that. But we didn't really have, I mean, there was a few working in where we was, but other than that, you'd see them in the streets and things like that, and they'd wave to you and things like that. They appreciated you being there. But, you know, it's...
Were all of them as good as you were with them, or did somebody dislike?
Oh, yeah, but not where we was. They not where I was, because, me and Bob and that, we just wouldn't have it. No way. But there was two or three people working in with us from the tank regiment. They was a little bit funny. You know, one of them was mucking about with his gun and shot a house boy. Always remember that.
Now, tell me about that. I mean, how did that happen?
Well, he was cleaning it. Yeah, he was in the tank regiment because they didn't have rifles. They had pistols, didn't they? And he was cleaning it and that and mucking about, and he shot the house boy. Because then they soon got rid of him in case me and Bob got our hands on him, because I'd have killed him.
Do you think he was deliberate or just...
No, he was careless. You get a lot of careless people, and he was a nutter. You know, he had his plume in his hat and all this and all that, Jack the Lad. And he shot the house boy. Remember that? He come and turned part of
home.
Yeah, yeah.
Was there a big investigation?
Oh, yeah, but they just had him away, didn't they? Canadian provos come, picked him up, wallop, he'd gone. Never even know more of him. He used to live in, I remember, because I spoke to him 2 or 3 times, he used to live down Turnpike Lane. But he was
a man. He was
never done. Well, I suppose he was. I suppose they took him away, but you don't hear of him, do you? It's like everything else. Picked up and swept under the carpet, whatever they did. He most probably got time for it. Most probably brought him back and put him in Colchester or something like that.
But you don't know.
No. But I can remember that as well.
I upset you as well.
Yeah.